Welcome to Ukraine Calling, a weekly roundup of what's been happening in Ukraine with a focus on a main story. I'm Marko Suprin for Hromadske Radio in Kyiv with an overview of some of the main events. The week started out with a bang. More accurately, a bang in an elevator that happened in occupied Donetsk City. Arseniy Pavlov, also known as Motorola, was one of the commanders of the Russian proxy army occupying eastern Ukraine. Apparently, some kind of bomb detonated when he entered the elevator of his apartment building and died as a result of injuries sustained from the blast. Pavlov was born in Russia's northern Komi Republic and took part in the Second Chechen War. He came to Ukraine in 2014 and was part of the Russian proxy forces led by Igor Girkin, another Russian national that occupied the town of Slovyansk. He also took part in the August 2014 Battle of Ilovaisk and the Battle for Debaltseve in February 2015. Battles that Western intelligence agencies have said were supported by regular Russian forces. He also commanded the Sparta Group that fought against Ukrainians in the battle for the Donetsk airport. Amnesty International considers him a war criminal, and he even boasted about killing 15 Ukrainian prisoners of war that were captured at the airport. In an interview with the Kyiv Post, he said, quote, "I shot 15 prisoners dead. I don't give a fuck. No comment. I kill if I want to. I don't if I don't." The leader of the terrorist group known as the Donetsk People's Republic, Alexander Zakharchenko, said that Pavlov's death amounted to a declaration of war by President Poroshenko, and he blamed Ukrainian special forces for the attack, something we'll talk about a little bit later in the show. Yuri Tandit, an advisor at Ukraine's security service, the SBU, said that Motorola's death is unfortunate because it's more important to have captured him alive and had him testify and answer for his crimes according to the law. Other Ukrainian analysts have said that the killing is more likely Russia's security service's attempt to cover their tracks. While international headlines focus on the shelling of Aleppo and the new offensive in Mosul, Ukrainian media was reporting that Russia proxy units intensified the use of heavy weapons in the Donbas. On Wednesday alone, over 500 missiles were fired at Ukrainian positions using weapons banned by the Minsk agreements. The strategy seems to be to destroy as much infrastructure as possible. Over the past week, two Ukrainian soldiers were killed and 16 were injured. The Russian proxy army announced that they were ready to pull back their weapons, but Colonel Lysenko, spokesman for the anti-terrorist operation, said their statement was a provocation. He said, quote, "The extraction of machinery and weapons is being conducted under the direct supervision and only in the presence of international observers from the OSCE and representatives from the Joint Center for Coordination and Control only after 7 consecutive days of ceasefire. This has not happened, and just yesterday, that is on Tuesday, they were shelling the town of Stanitsa Luhansk." He reiterated Ukraine's commitment to the removal of weapons and said that Ukraine has long ago come to an agreement with representatives of the OSCE about where they would station their forces. In the direction of Mariupol, Russian proxy forces opened fire with heavy weapons over 20 times using 82mm and 120mm shells. Fighting also continues around the town of Avdiivka, where the Russian occupation forces also regularly use large-caliber weapons against Ukrainian units. The fog of war is getting thicker by the day. At a conference titled The Minsk Agreement, EU-Russian Relations and the Role of Sanctions, held in the European Parliament on October 19th, Alexander Hug, first deputy of the OSCE Special Monitoring Mission, said that not all of the documents are public. Part of the Minsk Agreement, apparently, is considered secret, and because of that, he said, quote, "It is very difficult to carry out verification because no one knows for sure what was actually agreed upon." Ukraine is demanding the immediate release of all prisoners currently held by Russian proxy units in the occupied territories in an exchange for the release of Russian-backed proxies captured by Ukrainian forces. President Poroshenko stressed that this should include Ukrainian citizens that have been illegally detained in the Russian Federation, including Ukrainian filmmaker Oleg Sentsov, who was sentenced by a Russian kangaroo court to 20 years of hard labor. Member of Parliament and presidential advisor Irina Heraschenko said that Russian-backed proxies are holding 110 Ukrainian citizens and the process to get them released has been blocked by the Russian Federation. The Normandy 4 did in fact sit down for a face-to-face meeting this week in Berlin that ended up giving us a case of he said, she said. The meeting between Ukrainian President Poroshenko, German Chancellor Merkel, French President Hollande, and Russian President Putin lasted over 4 hours, longer than what was anticipated. Ukrainian press reported that advisor to President Putin, Vladislav Surkov, also attended the meeting, despite being under sanctions imposed by the European Union and apparently is not allowed entry into the EU. At the press conference after the talks, President Poroshenko said that the parties agreed to sign a new document by the end of November that will form the roadmap to allow for the full implementation of the Minsk Agreement. The Russian occupation army is supposed to retreat from Ukrainian territory and allow the OSCE unfettered access to all the territories currently under occupation, including Russian army proxy bases and those areas of the border with Russia that are currently not under Ukrainian control. However, President Poroshenko also said that, quote, preparatory work will begin to hold municipal elections that will eventually be held only when the security situation changes and allows for the elections. They apparently spoke about the creation of an OSCE police force that would be formed and deployed leading up to and during these eventual elections. Poroshenko referred to this as the Steinmeier formula, referring to German Foreign Minister Frank-Walter Steinmeier. During her press conference, Chancellor Merkel said that Ukraine will only get control over the border at the end of the process, that is, after elections are held in the occupied territories. She said that Ukraine will be drafting an election law that will facilitate these elections, and only after that can there be talks about an OSCE police force. Intelligence, espionage, and terrorism have been a part of our lives whether we like to think about it or not, and have been tools at the disposal of people in power and capitals around the world, and no less so in Ukraine. During the Russian Empire, the Tsar had a well-established network of spies throughout Europe and the Russian Empire, roughly called the Okhrana. After the Russian Revolution, the Communist Party essentially took control over that network and used those agencies as an instrument of terror, directing their energies and resources domestically, that is, against their own populations. In Soviet Ukraine, that agency had various names. During World War II, it was the NKVD. And more recently, during the Cold War, it was called the KGB. After the formal collapse of the Soviet Union, the Russian Federation renamed their agency, and today it's called the FSB. In Ukraine, the old KGB became the SBU. Despite the change in acronyms, the culture of these agencies remain largely the same, and they work together. That is, until about 2006, when Valentina Levchenko was appointed as the deputy head of the SBU in charge of the Anti-Terrorist Center. From December of that same year until about 2010, Valentin was the head of the SBU. He put into motion several reforms that cardinally broke with the traditions of the old Soviet KGB and laid down the foundation for a new SBU modeled after European intelligence agencies. His policy change resulted in depoliticizing and demilitarizing the SBU and redirected the agency to defend the interests of citizens, essentially changing the culture that considered your average Ivan a threat, and instead, the agency was now protecting the very same average Ivan. The agency focused on combating corruption, terrorism, narco-traffickers, and the illegal gun trade. Most radically, Valentin created public mechanisms, indeed democratic ones, for non-governmental agencies to oversee the activities of the SBU. He also created the first working group, Ukraine-NATO, that was tasked with military reforms. Valentin was born in the eastern city of Zaporizhia, that used to be home to the seat of the Ukrainian Cossack Hetman, also known as the Sich. He has had a diplomatic career that took him to places like Finland, Denmark, Norway, and Belarus. On September 11, 2001, the day foreign terrorism came to the United States, he was stationed at the Ukrainian embassy in Washington, D.C., and put into motion a plan that provided assistance to Ukrainian citizens living or working in the United States. Valentin, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much. My pleasure to be today here and talk to the audience.
In 2010, one of the first things that Yanukovych did was dismiss you from the SBU.
Yeah, it was the next day after his inauguration. I remember this day. And I'll tell you, Marco, why I did so. I understood that after the next day of the election, when Yanukovych came into power, that it's going to be back KGB times, it's going to be back all this pro-Russian propaganda, it's going to be reversed in many, many national security issues, which I strongly believe we have to do our way, European way, Ukrainian way. Thank you. You mentioned briefly on what I have done, especially first term in the SBU. But for me, and it might be interesting to people to hear from me personally, what did it mean? It meant for me in 2007 that we finally have to create our own national security service of Ukraine. What traditions to take, what principles to use, same as Ukrainian insurgent army with their security service created in 1943, 45, 46. Against whom? Against aggressors, occupators, again, both Bolsheviks and again, Nazis. So for me, it was like really the choice of direction, the vision of what should be done in my country and not and stop with all this KGB stuff and NKVD stuff and others. So that was the main, let's say, idea why and what I did in 2007, 8 and 9. And if you'll ask me what were the first results of even such, let's say, reform or even new vision for the security system or service of Ukraine, in 2008, in 2009, we have started to detain, to arrest FSB spies, FSB subversaries, subversive groups in Ukraine, in Odessa region, in Crimea. From even those years, we immediately understood what are the main threats towards national security of Ukraine. Russian hostile activity in Crimea, separatist movements supported and funded by Kremlin and Russian government, again, in Crimea, in Donetsk, in the Zakarpattia region. And I remember when first time ever in 2008 or in 2009, through the courts, through our, let's say, activity, SBU shut down and stopped the activity of Donetsk Republic organization in Donetsk, Sevastopol, Crimea, Russia in Crimea, whatever, Rusyn separatist movement in Zakarpattia. Nobody, even in the parliament in 2009, supported us. Just common people, just NGOs and international experts. Everybody else was saying, Valentin, why SBU, like, say, working against this Donetsk Republic organization? It's just a small organization. Of course, they are Russian-speaking. Let's tolerate and respect their rights. My answer was negative. We, from the very beginning, understood the difference between those like NGOs or whatever language-speaking people, different languages speaking, and real threats, real separatists, real dangers and threats to you know, Ukrainian national security. So that was the real understanding what and why we did it in 2007 and 2008.
Well, 4 years later, the parliament appointed you caretaker of the SBU after Yanukovych fled the country. Yeah. Espionage is a large part of the work of the FSB, and many analysts were not aware just how deep Russian agents from the FSB penetrated Ukrainian government structures. Yeah. Given that Ukraine was still going through a revolution then, and the Russian military forces were about to launch the invasion of Crimea, what were some of the first things you did as the head of the SBU?
Huge country like Russia planned and launched hybrid warfare. Military, special services, propaganda, TV stations, separatist organizations, all democratic institutions, even of your own, misused or corrupt by agents of special services. And this is same time, same place, and against your sovereignty.
We always hear talk about energy independence, and your efforts at reforming the SBU, I think, was the first step in building intelligence independence for Ukraine. Many of the SBU employees in the regions, unfortunately, like you just outlined, specifically in the Donetsk region, they wound up in the ranks of the Russian-backed Donetsk People's Republic. Were these believers in the Russian world, or were these outright Russian agents, and are there still to this day FSB sleeper cells in Ukraine?
I think both, that's for sure. And let's to understand correctly what Yanukovych did during 4 years or 3.5 years of his presidency. He totally infiltrated all law enforcement bodies, including SBU, by Donetsk people or people or pro-Russian people. Even those who used to serve in Russia, in FSB, in Russian military or Russian army. I'm talking very precisely, for instance, let's take an example. It's better to talk on, let's say, concrete things. In Donetsk, SBU regional office till February 2014. On the walls, or actually inside the office, they had invitations for every year for the families of so-called SBU officers to get to spend vacation at FSB sanatoriums in Russia. Small example, but this is self-explaining the what kind of SBU it was before February 2014, what kind of law enforcement Yanukovych created and actually has nominated to each and every office from Kyiv till Donetsk, what kind of officers, what kind of staff they actually nominated. Infiltration, damage inside the law enforcement bodies and the security services of Ukraine were very, very deep and very, let's say, painful to Ukrainian national security.
In July of 2014, as the Russian invasion progressed, Russian forces opened fire on a Boeing 777, a civilian long-haul airplane. MH17 is to Ukraine what Lockerbie or the downing of Pan Am Flight 103 is to Scotland, and both were acts of terrorism. MH17 is an act of Russian state-sponsored terrorism. How did Western intelligence agencies respond to the attack and subsequent downing of MH17, and what were some of the steps that you took following that act of terrorism?
Actually, we, Ukraine, are responsible for the investigation. And it's the same day of this terrorist act, me and actually Ukrainian government immediately we have unclassified all materials we have gathered. I'm immediately, exposed all evidences and facts SBU has collected. For next day, we have made public all information and data who actually committed this terrorist act. And I confirm this is Russian military crew, Russian military on-duty officers who came from Russia, crossed the Ukraine-Russian border, entered Donetsk, and then moved to one Pervomayskaya village. Why I say one? Because there are three Pervomayskoye, not even Pershotravneva, which is in Ukrainian, the 1st of May, but in Russian Pervomayskaya. And the Russian military crew with Buk M1, weapon of mass destruction, the rocket, which is the most dangerous, with the most extant attitude to actually to enter the target. They actually used this precise Buk M1 against civilian airplane. What is important, Marco? Not only that, only for the next day we have exposed all the evidences and told to the world and immediately started the investigation of the terrorist act committed by military officers from Russia, but also that in July 2 years ago, we have unclassified also information that same day in the same airborne in Ukraine, there were two civilian airplanes crossing same time at the same altitude. Is it
altitude?
Altitude, yeah, on the same altitude, the airborne of Ukraine in the same region, Donetsk region. One Malaysian Boeing 777 and the other flight, Aeroflot, from Moscow to Cyprus. And they were, let's say, crossing the airborne of our country, same Donetsk region, same time, and mostly at the same altitude, more than 10,000 meters. And one Pervomayskaya, which this Russian military crew has taken and where they have launched from the exact missile, the rocket, was to the east from Donetsk. And that is why they have actually targeted this Malaysian Boeing. If for any reason, for any unknown still, for me, a reason, they'll take the other side, Pervomayskaya, which is to the west from Donetsk, they'll hit and actually target the Aeroflot civilian airplane from Moscow to Cyprus with Russian families, with Russian children on board, innocent people. Why I am telling that? because this is war crime, this is terrorist act, and we should seriously treat this case, and as soon as possible pass, I think it's needed, and this is Ukraine's responsibility to organize public trial, to not to let it happen like with Lockerbie, Marco, right. You have just mentioned, not to let it happen that way, to finally bring those responsible to justice. If military people, that means military people, if to question them, to find out who ordered you to target, to fire against the civilian plane, and what exactly civilian plane you had to fire, Russian or Malaysian, or both, or any. That's why I think it's very important to really set up and have this trial.
Is there interest on their part to create a kind of international counter-terrorist agency?
This is the idea, the position which I think is important to do, to now to combine data efforts and to create international wide CTC, counterterrorism center or agency or international agency. Why? Because terrorism became, or actually started to be, global threat against everybody. There is no, let's say, boundaries so far. And what is even worse, what happened during these last 2-3 years, that Russia, as kind of a rough state, started to support such kind of terrorism. So in Ukraine, if it's not enough on my country, let's have a look what is happening in Syria. Syria, is it far away? No, 100 kilometers from European Union, from Cyprus. Let specialists from different country work together to investigate each and every act or terrorist act, to investigate any lead, any trace, which could lead to more secure Europe, to more secure, let's say, world.
Part of your work at the SBU was to combat the Russian invasion. And at the same time, you're also fighting an internal enemy that really has no name. People simply refer to it as the oligarchic system. In 2015, President Poroshenko asked you to resign. You founded a nationwide network called Spravedlivist, or Justice, to continue the efforts to change the culture of politics and break the cycle of corruption. Someone once said that the best prophet of the future is the past. Is this your effort to break that cycle?
My effort is the same after the Revolution of Dignity. I'll never change again like millions of Ukrainians. We'll never tolerate corruption at the top, especially at the top. And when after the Revolution of Dignity, Parliament assigned me to the security service to be the head again, I clearly told to Mr. Poroshenko as well, as a candidate to the of the president of Ukraine, that please, Mr. Poroshenko, I'll help you whatever I can, but to fight corruption at the top. I'll help you to fight corruption in the parliament, because the corruption in the parliament, I mentioned to you, Communist Party, Party of Regions, and other factions of parliament, parliamentary forces who supported for many years corruption and separatism against our country. I know the consequences. The whole world now see the consequences of the corrupt system, pro-Russian and separatist system, political system of Ukraine. We have lost so many people and so many lands and territory because of such kind of governance. Let's change it. I told the candidate, Mr. Poroshenko, he answered me, okay, Valentin, that's okay with me. I'd like you and others to fight corruption really at the top. We have stopped many, many shell companies related to the key members of even presidential factions in the parliament. I even mentioned their names because me and again, Ukrainian people were not afraid anymore of any corrupt official, Kononenko, Gontareva, others who are next to the president. And when the reaction of the president was in 2015, oh, that's okay, I'll take this whatever materials from you. Oh, you have signed. Good, Valentin, you have signed. Give it to me. And nothing. On the contrary, the previous general prosecutor, ex-general prosecutor, tried to even to hide the evidences, to stop criminal investigations against those corrupting the power in the government, in the parliament, close to the president. So that is why my decision was, okay, if I'm not fighting corruption, I'll not stay in corrupt government. That is why I'm not anymore Erdogan. But that means for me and for my colleagues that we'll continue the fight against our two main threats, Russian aggression and corruption at the top, corruption in the government or in the parliament of Ukraine. We'll continue even with the international organizations globally demanding Ukraine to join the anti-corruptional reforms like BEPS and other countries. Still, Ukraine is the only country which never signed these papers, initiated by President Obama, supported by British government, considered and supported by G20 in China. Not in China, but in China. So the only president who did not sign is President Poroshenko. Why so? It's time to stop corruption at the top. It's time to really be stronger to protect our homeland from the Russian aggressor. You'll never find resources. You'll never be capable to respond if in your country, in your government, in your parliament, corruption is still on.
Human intelligence and signal intelligence are two important aspects of any agency. Recently, one of the men behind the Russian invasion, also known as Motorola, had an elevator accident. The Russian proxies immediately blamed Ukrainian intelligence agencies. How likely is that?
I think that human intelligence is the most important, of course, when it's, equipped with the technical and other, intelligence tools and instruments. That's the first thing, and very professional. And Ukraine, Ukrainian SBU after the Maidan, after the Revolution of Dignity, I have actually targeted and directed on such principles. Two priorities, counterintelligence and counterterrorism, to stop and not be anymore occupied with any other activities, whatever from the past or any economic or whatever issues. We should stop it, and security service to be targeted only on against, espionage and terrorism. Another point should be mentioned today that starting January 2015, one by one, such criminals, such terrorists are being eliminated. I think the last one, so-called accident in the elevator, is the seventh such operation. That's the only information so far I can give to the extent audience. But I am sure that for Ukraine, for us, it's important to expose to the whole world and to Ukrainians, as well as to people still living at the temporarily occupied territories, who they are, those terrorists, what they do, what kind of war crimes they've committed or still being committed, what kind of corruption and other, criminal activity they are involved in. What are doing those Russian generals, Russian GRU people and FSB people supporting such individuals, supporting such people like this Motorola and others? I think this is very important for Ukraine and then for international community to set up and have trial on each and every war criminal or any other terrorist or criminal being involved in this illegal activity at the temporarily occupied territories of Ukraine. It will be high time to expose all evidences, to show people who eliminated this particular terrorist and what he did or what kind of criminal activity he was involved in. Immediately after the Revolution of Dignity, we have restarted as well cyber security department, and our international partners fully supported us. We have joined immediately a so-called Estonian cyber center under NATO auspices, And I think for Ukraine, for our national security, it's very important to combine or to support the international activities of such Estonian and NATO cyber centers or cyber defense agencies, and same time combine efforts with the international community.
Bob Dylan, whose grandparents came from Odessa, Ukraine, reminded everyone that the times they are a-changin'. Ladies and gentlemen, remember the name Valentin Nalivaychenko, because he's one of the few people that can bring about big changes. Valentin, thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much.
Ukrainian filmmaker Omelyan Oshudlyak from Lviv developed a public service ad named Protect Them for a project called They're Just Like Us, aimed at helping our four-legged friends that can't help themselves. His PSA won first place during the Molody Festival, an event geared toward showcasing public service announcements. His take on the plight of homeless animals is unique and worth your time. Oshudlyak used real actors to play the part of homeless dogs. We'll include a link to the ad on our site. Ukraine is also hosting one of the largest stands at the 68th Annual European Book Trade Show in Frankfurt, one of the world's largest. The idea was coordinated by the Ministry of Culture, together with the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and included private partnerships with the Lviv Publishers Forum and others. Izolatsia, a platform for cultural initiatives, designed the Ukrainian space at the trade show. Izolatsia used to be based out of Donetsk until Russian proxy units and local terrorists forced them to leave town. The Russian-backed occupation municipal administration turned their former art factory into a prison. Norway is considering a Pentagon request to rotate a small unit of U.S. Marines through Norway for training, a sign that U.S.-Russian relations are in fact growing colder. A song I'd like to leave you with is called March of the Normans and is dedicated to Ukrainian sharpshooters. Today, we'd call them snipers. The Ukrainian Siege Riflemen were one of the first regular military units of Ukraine's army during World War I. They defended the new Ukrainian government in Kyiv from the Bolshevik invasion and later fought regular Red Army forces that moved into Ukraine in 1918. This modern take on an old song is by Ukrainian gothic rock group Komu Vniz. Tune in next week for a new episode of Ukraine Calling, and we'll get an inside look at Russia's attempt to turn Donetsk into a new gulag. If you have any suggestions or comments, feel free to write the show at ukrainecalling@hromadskaradio.org. I'm Marco Suprin in Kyiv. Thanks for listening.